ways media to hear previous shows, to access resources, or support our efforts towards social change via community project engagement. Thank you, and bye for now.
This is KBOO Portland coming up next. At 11, Stage and Studio and Art Focus are off for a special presentation of Peace, Love, and Soup. This is KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. KBOO programming is made possible by cable member listeners and support from the Clinton Street Theater, open since 1915, featuring independent films, parties, and community events, located at 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. Full event schedule, tickets, showtimes, and more information is available online at cstpdx.com.
Welcome to Peace, Love, and Soup,
bringing you significant soups along with culture, cooking,
and conversation.
When I say the words mother and soup, what pops into your mind?
My mom would make soup, not really soups I was crazy about, but when I was a little kid and I was sick, she would always make me Mrs. Grass's chicken soup, which has the golden egg. And this became very important to me. I still have Mrs. Grass's chicken soup when I'm sick. And I think when I was six, I was sick and my mother made it and there was no golden egg. I was very upset. So we wrote the company and they sent us a coupon so that we could buy three boxes of Mrs. Grass's soup for free. It made a big impression on me.
Tave, hello.
Hello, Brian.
Welcome to May.
Well, let's share with our listeners what we've got in store for them.
This month, we're honoring and celebrating mothers everywhere.
Married, single, and adoptive. From newly sleep-deprived moms
to well-rested grandmothers.
We hear sweet stories from strangers on the street
about their mother's fun, lovingly prepared soups.
And in the kitchen this month, we'll be making the mother of all soups, chicken noodle. Traditional?
Hell yeah. But with some upgrades and hacks.
It's inspired by our interviewed guests.
I can almost hear our mothers calling us to the table now.
Time to get our soup on. Won't you join us for Peace, Love, and Soup?
I'm Eli and I'm 12 years old.
Who'd you bring with you?
My mom's name is Alex, and she is 52 years old.
Alex is a writer in Portland. She teaches through Writers in the School. Her debut story collection, Planet Grimm, will be out in the fall of 2017.
I'm going to start crying probably. You're such a gifted writer. I was reading your stuff. It was so moving.
Thanks. The book actually is fiction, but the essays that you read are from a memoir that I haven't had published yet.
So just can I reference one of your articles, Napalm Picnic? You say in the story, motherhood wasn't a desire out of frustration, but a longing from childhood. So you always wanted to be a mother. Can you talk about the process?
Oh, sure. About 1998, I started to try to get pregnant, but it took a few years before I was tested, and then I found out I was going to have difficulty because my fallopian tubes were blocked. And it took a really long time to say that I was infertile. Yeah, even saying it now, it's kind of hard. I wouldn't really wish it on anybody. But I've written about how that feels to have it not work out twice. So I'm just so happy that it turned out that I could be Eli's mom, that it was worth all the pain and the money. Once I realized that it would be difficult for me to bear a child, I got involved with this group in San Francisco called Resolve. They were great because they brought in all these different families who were formed through adoption. So I met birth mothers, parents who had adopted from China and Guatemala and in the United States, and kind of talked about the whole process so it didn't seem as scary. We chose China because we just really liked the Chinese American culture.
What was it like when you were first able to hold this lovely human being in your arms?
All we had was 3 referral photos. He was dressed in pink because pink is a boy's color, and he looked like a little Michelin man all stuffed because the orphanages aren't heated. Mm-hmm. So they just wrapped him up in as much clothes as possible. And he was just so cute. He was 10 months old, didn't know how to crawl. So then the nannies brought him out and put him in my arms. He just kind of like was curious, so he had interest in us. But I think that I just felt like, wow, this stranger, they're giving me this stranger. Mm-hmm. And then I don't really remember, but I've seen a video that I just go, my baby, my baby. And when we got back to the hotel, we actually fed him soup. But he cried and cried, and I thought, oh, was it too hot? But I think that he was grieving and he was scared.
Eli, do you have any memory of being in the orphanage?
Or not really.
Young? Yeah.
Eli, what's the first memory that you have of your mother?
Most of the really old memories are just from looking back at pictures of me and her.
When you finally had him, it had to just be like, oh, thank heavens, I have this child.
Oh, true. Yeah, I think also there's a sense of being conspicuous because everyone wanted to have comments. Even before we adopted him, there people had opinions like, well, you shouldn't adopt from another country. There's all these kids here who need parents. It's just like a lot of judgment around that I didn't expect.
Well, and you mentioned in one of your articles about labels and calling you adoptive mom. Do you like that label?
I just want to be mom, but I do tend to write about adoption a lot, so then I can't have it both ways.
Having an adopted brother myself, it's something really dear to my heart. Can you comment on my theory that adopted children are especially treasured?
Well, I think that any woman who has a child biologically would probably disagree, so I can only speak for myself. He is treasured, and also he taught me to be the kind of mom that he needs. For instance, food. I think that's the way he first bonded with us. Like, he didn't understand English, but he would just like tap us and knead us, cry and want these bottles, because I think that that was a way for him to get attention from other adults in his life. In his DNA, there's certain foods that he likes. Like, he loves rice, he loves spicy foods. He loves soy sauce. So there's certain things that he gravitates towards.
Oh, nice. What was the first soup that you fed him that you are mentioning?
A noodle soup. Yeah, he loved noodles as a little kid, yeah.
Eli, what's one of your favorite times with your mother?
Playing board games.
Who usually wins?
Me.
What do you do for fun?
I like making my family laugh.
I want to say something funny, but I'll try to be serious.
You can, no.
I miss playing music right now. I'm not in a active band, but hopefully.
So great
well,
to
speaking
know.
Speaking of bands, your son's in a band, right? Eli,
yes.
Do you want to talk about your band?
Yeah.
What songs are you guys playing?
We're playing Seven Nation Army, War Pigs, and Paint It Black.
Wow. What instrument do you play?
Well, I go from like marimba, snare drum, and then bass drum, crash cymbals.
And what's the group that you're with called?
I think it's just the Mount Tabor Middle School Band.
Wow, I'm really looking forward to having some of your music on the show. What does the word mothering mean to you, Alex?
Eli's dad, he's living in China now. When we were all living together, I felt like I had like these kind of tentacles going out all the time to try to figure out like what everyone was doing and how whatever needs were met. Like sometimes I would need my own space. So I went to grad school and that enabled me to find my own space as a writer. But as far as mothering, I guess I just want Eli to feel secure. I really want him to go visit China, and I'm hoping that he'll want to go back to his orphanage one day, because I think that usually if you go back, you'll get more information. But in China, like only 10% of the kids who are in orphanages would be adopted internationally at the time, and now a lot fewer. So 90% of the kids will be institutionalized their whole life, and probably at 16 then they would be laborers. Eli's Chinese surname means river, and so all of the kids from the orphanage would have that last name, and it would mark them as not being part of a traditional family name. Mm-hmm. So in that case, I also feel fortunate that we were able to bring Eli to this country. He's always had an awareness of his skin color, and I feel bad that he doesn't have a larger Asian American community, and that hasn't really happened because you just meet the friends you meet. But I thought he'll go to the immersion program and everything will be great. He'll be perfectly integrated into Portland, and then he's kind of found his own way.
Eli, what's it like being in a biracial family?
I don't find it any different. I just think of it as a normal family.
Do you know other children that are adopted?
Yeah. There is one family that went to China with us and adopted a girl, and then I have a friend who was adopted from Guatemala.
During the election cycle, I was really upset because anti-Asian slurs got kind of ignored by the mainstream media. People think it's okay to make fun of Asians and Asian Americans in all sorts of forms. I see it in commercials. I see it on TV shows. And then I see it coming out of the lips of the person who's now president of the United States. So I always feel like an advocate to call that out when I see it.
Do you have anything you'd like to add?
I don't really take it in.
What advice do you have for mothers at large?
Well, I'm really glad you asked me that question because no one asked me for advice as an adoptive
mom. Really?
Well, it's probably an exaggeration, but just try to relax and enjoy it all because it goes by quickly. I mean, that's the cliche, but it's true. When I hear even his voice changes, his body changes, and there's like different trends in parenting that you think that has to be the right thing, and then you realize, wow, that might not have worked for my child. But he did co-sleep with us when he was little, and that seemed to help because of his early orphanage years where he was with a lot of other babies.
Any other advice for other adoptive mothers?
I guess just trust yourself. I have a friend that's going to go through foster adopt, and I just said, you can just tell me every little detail along the way. Just know that you can reach out to people because they really do care. And a lot of your stories that are really painful relate to other people's stories. People I didn't know told me that they had had miscarriages or different difficulties. And I've just felt so enriched by all those people's stories. And I think people want to know your stories.
That's so beautiful. You're an exquisite mother. And I hope you know that.
Thank you.
What's one of your fondest memories you have of your mother?
Well, I always liked the way that she smelled. She had, I think she called it oil. Was it oil of Olay? She called it oil of old lady. She's funny and she's very relaxed. She was a homemaker. My dad was a reporter, so she spent a lot of time with us at home and read to me a lot, always ready to drop whatever and help out. But then she had her own life, too, when she started working.
Do you have any plans for next Sunday, which is Mother's Day?
It's also his adoption day.
Yeah, happy adoption day. And happy Mother's Day to you.
Thanks.
Being a soup podcast, yeah, we'd love to, of course, hear about your soup stories. Are there any soups that you like?
Eli.
My mom makes chili. I like spicy food. I just like having more and more spicy things to challenge myself, I guess.
You need to maybe put a little more spicy stuff in your soups and get you souping more. What's your thoughts on travel?
I want to move somewhere really hot, like Dubai, because it's modern. I like modern architecture, and I want to be an architect.
Interesting.
I like drawing buildings. My first grade teacher, he said I'd be good at architecture, so he kind of got me into it.
Do you have any class in particular that you like?
Not really.
Okay.
I'm glad that he's learning Mandarin.
I've been taking it since sixth grade.
Oh, what is mother in Mandarin?
It's mama.
Mama?
That was an easy question.
Oh, I speak a little Mandarin, don't I? How do you say I love mom?
Wo hen chi huan mama.
Any other fun words in Mandarin?
Swear words?
No. Not swear words. Brian Delaney.
He doesn't know those, though.
How do you say soup in Mandarin? Do you know?
I don't know how to say soup.
And what about thank you?
Xie xie.
Thank both of you for coming in so much. Did you have any last things that you wanted to share?
For my birthday, I would really like a pug.
Or maybe for adoption day.
No.
No, she's like thumbs down. Oh my goodness.
Well, how would you say goodbye?
Zai jian.
When Brian and I were talking about doing the episode for this month about mothers, the topic came up of also interviewing an adoptive mother and son. And I went, oh, that's right. My brother's adopted.
Yeah.
Something I don't think about.
Why would it come to your mind? Or for me, like, why would it come to my mind? Mm. It's something that's there. It's something I just don't talk about too often just because I don't think about it. You know, if someone raises you your entire life, that's all you know. And my mother's so loving and my father was so loving. And nice to be loved that much. It's hard to find someone who loves you that unconditionally. That's how I feel about my mom. You think about it, not often. Like, I've thought about it over the years a few times here and there. Just think, well, man, like, where is my heritage? Who are they, you know? Mm-hmm. Or where are they, if they're even alive? I don't think you can not think of that once. That's just the human nature part of you. Most of my family has, like, Italian roots, and then I'm half Iranian. Mm-hmm. That's really fascinating, you know, because I'm not raised by anyone who's Iranian. I've even asked my mom about it, and she's been really cool. And she said they were lovely people, and she got to speak with them, but there wasn't much more than that. Mm-hmm. I just don't think they were in the right position to raise a child, so I got brought up by my mom, and that was good. I'm in a good position. I'm happy, and I'm healthy. Yeah, life is good.
You fairly recently got back from living in Australia for a year and traveling around Burma and Southeast Asia and Europe. What are some of your favorite things about travel?
Oh, man. I mean, it's just unmatched, the feelings I get and just the people that you meet and the cultures that you see. I was never one to really say I feel the most alive when I'm doing this. That is the truest thing. I don't know. Iran's really high on my list to travel to. Just fascinated with the Middle East and the fact that I am part Iranian, like it makes it more fascinating. Like that's the country that like my genes are from, mm-hmm. You know, that's like part of my make. I think those countries get a bad rap because, man, in reality, there's just so many amazing people. And so what I did is I just started this travel page. It's called Travels of Beauty. You can check it out if you want, at Travels of Beauty. And what I do is I post photos of a unique site in the world of different photographers that I really like, or even my own photos here and there. And I post a cool quote because I want it to be thought-provoking. You know, yeah, you can have a child, you can find the person you love, you can get your home, and those things are amazing, but I think travel is right there. I honestly think it's the most humbling thing in the world. You know, I don't think I'd be who I am without the things that I've seen. You know, I've had relationships abroad. I've lived in so many countries, prayed with different people, seen different things, ate so much food, and that's, I feel like that's like what I live for.
I completely agree with you. First of all, I just adore you, and I have to say that.
Likewise.
But 100%. I just love watching your eyes light up, so it's clearly something that you like.
Yeah, I mean, every culture is different, and that's why we love to travel, right? We love to see and open our minds and let stuff resonate with us in different ways.
Talk to me about soup. Do you like soup? Be honest.
Not my first choice of food, probably not my second or third either, but I mean, I'll eat it if it's around. But if I do eat it, I have to have hot sauce in it. I think I have a slight addiction to hot sauce. Anything savory, like I just put tapatio on like pastas and stuff. Not all pastas, you know, you don't want to disrespect the person cooking it, but you know, but with soups, it has to have some sort of thing because it usually doesn't cut it for me. I like pho though. But pho's not like eating chicken noodle soup. No offense, your chicken noodle soup was good. Damn, I shouldn't have said that. I don't know. I think I like the Asian style soups. You know, take me to Japan for a ramen bowl or take me to China. And especially I live in Southern California and it's warm a lot. So a soup, I don't know.
There was one time I remember when the girls and I were down visiting you and we were all going to the canals. First, we were going to get food to take to the beach. And mm-hmm. I'm thinking, you know, a sandwich or something.
Yeah.
And Osana and Lucinda ordered chicken noodle soup
guys, man.
And milk.
I'm lactose intolerant, so that just sounds like a disaster. Spare me.
We got down to the waterline and we're setting out the beach towels and a nice warm bowl of soup. Carton of milk at the beach. What a lovely lunch.
Oh, God. That's when you know you're not from around that area.
I'm so happy you're my brother. Yeah. I 100% get you. I wanna be your brother. I wanna be your mother and sister too.
There ain't no other. My mom made a lot of soup, vegetable soup, specialty, rosemary, navy bean soup, tofu noodle soup. We're talking vegetarian soup. We got chili always with the cornbread. That's chili with TVP. Yeah, mom taught me to make soup. I think vegetable soup was the vessel in which, as a little kid, she taught me to smell the green spices and crumble them into the soup. Yeah, we're a serious soup family.
When I was growing up, my mother would make this this sort of like beef stew that was always really comforting and delicious. She made it year-round. She didn't just make it in the winter or in the autumn. And at this point in my life, whenever I'm in a grocery store and I see chunks of beef for sale, or when I'm at the farmer's market and see okra, green beans, carrots, things like this, it reminds me of my mother. It makes me crave her beef stew. Makes me want to go and visit her.
You're listening to Peace, Love, and Soup.
Hello?
Robin, thanks so much for being on the show with us today.
Thanks for having me. I still can't believe I'm a mom.
Now, when did you give birth to Remzi?
almost 1 month ago.
Oh my gosh. Well, you just had a baby. Tell us all about it.
What is there to tell? I'm terribly sleep deprived. But I mean, it's all the things that newborn happiness can bring. It's beautiful and brutal at the same time. It's like the extremes of life. I feel like I have become a soldier because there's things that I have to do that I would have never done in my singular solo life. You're just constantly in a frazzle, and to even consider food and new recipes can be daunting. But you have to eat because you're feeding somebody else from your body, which is turned into a milk machine.
And this is coming from a foodie, because when I first met you, you were like traveling the country, eating at wonderful restaurants and drinking amazing wine. So to hear you say, like, I don't know what to think about food is just shocking.
No? Yeah, Brian, that was another lifetime ago.
You're still a fun party girl. Come on. What are you talking about?
I was all about travel and food and was not even thinking about being a mom. And then I moved to Brooklyn 5 years ago, and a year later met my fiance, this magical man, and I wanted nothing more but to procreate with him. And now we have two babies. So much better than any five-star restaurant could ever be. It's really something I highly recommend to everybody on the planet Earth. I heard once that career-driven women who work more than 40 hours a week versus women who are doing those careers with kids, the women with the kids were actually less stressed out. They say it's because when you're just working without kids, you're kind of giving everything, all of yourself, into your work. And when you have your kids, you're giving part of yourself to your kids, and your kids actually love you back, whereas your work doesn't love you back. I hope that that's not too controversial.
No.
Because I think I was one of those career women, so.
It's a wonderful thing that as a parent, you get so good at juggling stuff, and I wonder if some of that carries over into your work, like if you just get better at doing it.
I think so, yeah. And maybe it's also easier to take things a little lighter and move forward in ways that were unthinkable before. I also have a 23-month-old. She really forces me to take things lightly. If you start getting heavy with her, then she just goes down a bad road. And if you keep everything light and fun, and this tantrum might be happening right now, but it's going to pass in just about 2 minutes, and then we're going to be on to something else.
Are you talking about your fiance, or are you talking about your daughter?
It does. It actually does help you through all relationships in life, because you see that the lightness road is the road to ease and happiness.
Don't you feel it really stretches you as a human being? It's the most horrific, wonderful.
Literally, and I think pregnancy can be tough, and obviously labor is no joke, and so you get through it all. And there's just these celestial beauties waiting for you. So,
well, you sound like you're doing an excellent job and handling it all really well, too. We just interviewed somebody who had issues becoming pregnant and later adopted.
Oh, God, I have so much admiration for people who adopt, and there's so many kids who need love in this world. And to open your home to somebody, I think that's so admirable, and I have always thought about that. One of the things that I never realized that happens when you meet your
Because you're saying even children that you birth are strangers to you, so the same would be said for adoption.
Yeah, you know, people think that, like, oh, I can't adopt for some reason or another. I mean, it sounds so hippie, but we're all children of this planet, so it takes us all to kind of look out for each other and raise each other.
That's fantastic, yeah. And I guess, like, what is mothering, and can other people mother you besides your own parent?
Oh, God, yes, absolutely. I have an amazing sisterhood of friends here in New York, because my family is all in California, who really looked out for me and still do and take care of me.
We've shared with each other how I'm like your gay husband, but sometimes you are like such a supportive mother to me. And I really, really appreciate it. And a friend at the same time. So
Anyway. That is so beautiful. I can't believe you said that, Brian. You're my mother.
Oh, you guys.
We mother each other. Happy Mother's Day, Mom.
Yes, happy Mother's Day to you, Ryan. Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing being able to mother and let yourself be mothered by other people. And I think just having that mm-hmm. vulnerability, too, to allow that and also to recognize that, you know?
You're right. Mm-hmm. I think what happens with women especially is that we're such born caretakers that we forget that we also need to be taken care of.
Definitely.
I assumed that we were going to talk about soup at some point.
Soup? Why would we talk about soup?
So if you were thinking about your mother and soup, what story comes to mind?
I've always wanted to go to Shake Me. And so my mom rented a limo and picked me up.
Wait, what restaurant is this again?
Chez Panisse.
Oh, thank you.
It's a set menu. When you get there, you don't order. And one of the opening scenes was a celery root soup. This sounds totally disgusting because one of the few things I hate in life is celery. Anyway, it came out and it was the most delicious, exceptional. I was so unexpected because I'm not a soup person at all. It never occurred to me to drink my calories, except for wine. But actually, it was like wine because it was so structural and had all this depth and complexity to it. And now I have a new appreciation for soup.
Well, you're also broadening our soup horizons because we can do stew, we can do tea, and now we're going to open it up
wine.
To wine.
Wine is soup.
Let's get some Pinot Noir soup.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and I think you'll find as the kids get older, it can become something that you can make easily. And it's so delicious and nutritious, and you can just always have a ready meal to go.
That's the hope. My toddler, she's at the stage where she's really just about like French fries and chicken nuggets. She's not into soup either. You guys have any insight on ways to introduce vegetable soup that might be more fun or in disguise?
It sounds quite difficult because I think it's pretty inbred that she doesn't like soup like her mom.
Well, I mean, it can also be you take something you know she likes. Say, you know, she likes chicken, she likes French fries. So maybe it's like it's a creamy potato chicken soup or something. And that's maybe what you start with.
Maybe you have a recipe that I can make from.
You'll be able to use this month's chicken noodle soup recipe, the mother of all soups, which we are going to discuss. And if there's a specific type of pasta, you could use so many different types. There's like alphabet noodles or fettuccine noodles or whatever sort of shape you like.
Alphabet soup? That sounds brilliant because my almost 2-year-old is really excited about the ABCs. So anything that we can put in front of her that's related to that. That's why I love you guys. I love your podcast because I just need the inspiration. Then I can roll it out.
Well, I've had almost 2 decades of practice now, so.
I'm only in year 2, so I need all the help I can get.
Well, you have our number.
Oh, I miss you so much. And I was like, when I saw that you're on KBOO, I was like, oh my God, this is so appropriate. I always call Brian my boo. He's my husband. The reason he's my husband is because when I moved to New York, I was dating horrific New York guy. And along comes Brian, and we start working together, and he treats me like this queen and this goddess. He's like, Robin, do you mind if we take the long way home just so you can see this gorgeous view? And I was like, oh my God, this is how I want my husband to treat me. You know, you have to manifest what you want in life. So I started calling him my husband. So someone who treats me this good will become my husband.
And I was also the one that told you had to date 3 men at a time because you get too attached if you're just one or two.
I called it 4 pots on the burner. I have to have 4 pots on the burner at all times.
I didn't tell you go 4 guys. I was the tricky triangle. I told you about the tricky triangle.
Well, I interpreted it
as 4 pots,
and one of them can be boiling. But the rest of them have to be on simmer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That is very fascinating.
That was good advice. Yeah, it worked out great.
I wonder if I should share that with my teenage daughter.
Oh, not yet.
So 3 pots on the burner is what it is.
She does 4, apparently.
Oh, well, oh, okay. It sounds like the timing was good.
All right,
at that note, thank you so much, Robin. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you so much. It was so fun.
Yes.
Your energy is so infectious. Well, take care of that baby and take care of yourself,
okay,
too.
I will. Okay.
Bye.
It's kind of a weird story. It's about my grandmother, and she used to make excellent soup, but she always like made this joke about there being more puppy in the bottom of the soup. So I always avoided getting any meat because I was afraid there was like dog meat in the bottom of the soups. You know, I didn't really get the story until later in life, which is, I guess my grandfather was eating like dog soup somewhere, I think in France during World War II, because they like didn't have hardly any food over there. But as a child, I didn't get that. You got to get down in to get the puppy in the bottom of the soup.
When I was growing up, my mom was always making chicken soup. There'd always be like a big pot on the stove that was cooking for a whole day. When I went out on my own, I thought, well, that'll be easy. I'll just make soup for myself. So I just would get a chicken and put it in a pot with water and boil it. And it didn't turn out great. I had a mess at the end. I had to pick out the bones and skim off the fat and kind of call it soup. So when I went back home to visit my mom, I noticed she would cook the chicken first and set the meat aside and then cook the rest of it and strain off the broth. I think that's the correct way to do it. I wouldn't recommend just throwing the whole chicken in the pot. So don't boil meat because it's not going to be good. So there we have it.
You're listening to Peace, Love, and Soup.
Here we are again in the kitchen.
We're making the mother of all soups, chicken noodle soup.
Now, Tava, you were a very busy bee last night, weren't you?
Well, I made the base, which is our stock, last night. I used my mother-in-law's recipe of doing it. I took the carcasses of two roasted chickens, threw them in a pot, along with the tops and bottoms of a celery bunch, and the peels of 8 carrots, and a couple sprigs of rosemary, and I also put in an entire yellow onion that I'd cut up into a few pieces, and 5 cloves of garlic, and covered it all with water, brought it to a boil, and kept it at a medium simmer for about 4 hours. Then I refrigerated it overnight, and so now we have this fat just ready to skim right off the top like we're doing now. Oh, and don't put salt in your stock. When your stock boils, it boils down, and so you may have then accidentally oversalted. Well, we got all of the fat skimmed off, and we're just going to pour it all through a